Thank you very much, Daniel, and thank you to everyone, really, for inviting me to speak here today and for having the good grace to make it through to the final paper-ish before coffee. Just to respond to Andreas Moore, we absolutely agree. We think manuscripts should be online, we think they should be free and accessible to everyone, and I'll even go a step further. I think they should be free and accessible via IIIF. Because if I was able to put this PowerPoint together on a train yesterday, pulling manuscripts from four different repositories, I think that's pretty good. So the comparisons that you'll see here were all made via IIIF, except when I've pulled out a few details, just because I thought they looked better the other way. So history is inherently related to books. From the family Bible that records births or deaths or baptisms, to, say, the annals of the kings of Ulster. Or, in the case of Insular manuscripts, you really don't get better than Bede. I've changed that title, and I think you'll see why. So here's Bede. It's at the very end of Book 1, and he's recording that in 601, a delegation was sent from Pope Gregory the Great, bringing extra supplies for Augustine to come convert to the English. On the far side, you have Cambridge University Library. I'd like to point out that they're IIIF compatible. And then closest to me, you have one of mine. Theirs is in Latin, mine is in Old English, and they note that it's Codices Plurimus that Mellitus is bringing to come help out the English mission. But books tell us much more than just what happened. They're more than just histories. So in mine, it's been translated into Old English. Was written as a presentation copy, a gift from Leofric to Exeter, and someone's gone in and added prayers for nativity up in the upper margin. And there's a little tiny red number one up there. That's Matthew Parker. He was Archbishop of Canterbury to Elizabeth I, and the Parker Library's single biggest donor. He had to have been. We named the library after him. But he's helping me out there. He's telling me that this is Book 1 of Bede's Ecclesiastical History. So what about that book that Mellitus possibly brought to Augustine? Well, it turns out we've got that one. So I thought, we'll show you some images of it. It's possibly the one that Mellitus brought, or it's possibly one Augustine brought with him. But what about other books? Books that are not books for books' sake, but books that speak to larger cultural programs afoot. Programs run by men like King Alfred the Great, who decided that he was going to change all books most necessary for men to know into English so they could be read by the clerics and bishops of his land. This is his letter to the bishops. In it, he notes that there are some books that need to be translated. And you can see that tremulous hand of Worcester that we encountered earlier today, still hanging out there in the margins. Moving to slightly more recent history, this was a paper I gave 10 days ago. To be honest, not a section of script that I'm too comfortable with. Insular I can do, but national hands were a bit of a stretch. So I decided I need to go back to basics, to reread Bischoff and Dunville and Rosamond and Kittrick. But I had this paper, the paper that I'm giving now, in mind, the question of what exactly makes an Irish manuscript? Well, a manuscript written in Ireland, certainly. But Bischoff himself tells me that it's a little difficult to distinguish between what is Irish and what is Anglo-Saxon. Though I'm told they're very different than what was being made on the continent. However, that they should be identifiable, by their decoration, abbreviations, letter forms, and orthography. My session partners mentioned earlier that the vast majority of Irish books are held in English, Irish, Scottish repositories. I can, hand on heart, say the Parker Library is not one of them. I have one Irish book, of a sort. It's a few leaves, and I decided to compare it with a Bodleian book, one of the Rawlinson Three, simply as, well, we're here in Oxford. I can compare the hands. There's definitely some similar letter forms there. But while theirs is certainly Irish and continues on to actually be written in Irish, mine is the antithesis. Because those four leaves of Irish manuscript are attached to the Anglo-Saxon glossary. It is most certainly a very English book. But did the book go to Ireland to pick up those fly leaves? Or was the Irish book coming here? I'm not sure that we'll ever know the answer to that question. We know very little about that book's provenance before it ends up in Parker's hands in the 1570s. But it got me thinking, if this book, a very English book, is connected to Irish materials, maybe we need to think about, well, decentralizing the codex. Think about connections between Ireland and, shall we just say, the British Isles for the time being. This is another manuscript in my collection. We know the scribe, Ewan ap Suillian. He gives us a nice little colophon at the end, which seems to be a theme today. And we know that he went and studied in Ireland. And we can see it in the decoration, in the little red dots that surround the capital, and what Dunville calls diminuendo, the idea that script gets bigger and then smaller as we go into the text. In looking at this, I thought that decoration looked a little familiar, and indeed that's the Bodleian Codex from before. Same spiraling forms, same little biting animal heads, a few extra legs. Not bad. And in looking even more closely, I noticed this. That abbreviation that looks like an H is a particularly insular abbreviation for Etiam. Yet I know that this manuscript was written in Wales. Does it count as Irish? What about this? For us, this is the Northumbrian Gospel fragments. But if we're using Dunville's characteristics that set up something as Irish, well, we certainly have some Irish decoration, little red dots, and some nice interlaced work, and yet another Irish abbreviation, this one for Outim instead. However, it was made in Northumbria, possibly the foundation that was founded by Irish monks, though it's never been conclusively proven. Could it count as Irish? Well, if that takes us through Wales, through the north of England, through somewhere in the south of England with the Anglo-Saxon glossary, might it be time also to look a little further afield? We know that the Irish went and established monasteries on the continent in the 7th and 8th centuries. Quite a few of them. Men like Columbanus, who comes to fly in Lutzeal, which then gives birth to three more. Gallus, a follower of Columbanus. Was he Irish? We don't know. He could have been. The jury's still out, I think. He'll go found a hermitage at St. Gall in 612, though they won't get around to building the abbey for a few more years. Or someone who's English. Because after all, I think we've established the connection between them. Bathhild was the English widow of Clovis II, who decided she was going to go found some nunneries up on the north coast of France. Nunneries that would continue to have strong links to the English throne as we progress into the Carolingian period. So what about one more Parker manuscript? But this one was made at Tours. Now, Tours wasn't a monastery on that list, though there are certainly people of English descent who are at Tours. After all, Alcuin, after he had served his time with Charlemagne, ends up being made abbot at Tours. So he certainly brought books with him, we know that much from his letters with Charlemagne. We know that from his exchanges with the abbess at Shell, one of those insular foundations. She asked him for books, and he says he's very sorry, but he can't send them because he sent them to somebody else. Try again later. Who knew Alcuin was everybody's borrowing library? This, to me, looks like someone's seen an insular book. Look at the decoration up at the top. It looks just like that book made in Wales. Same orange, even. You have the same diminuendo that Denville says, but that's probably not quite enough, because this is in a beautiful Caroline hand. Skip for, just a detail. But if you skip forward, just 100 pages or so, you end up here, where the scribe has copied some interlinear glosses into the text. If we take a closer look at those are Irish interlinear glosses. So while this book is not Irish, the one that it was copied from was. And the scribe is not Irish, but he's certainly been trained to write at least initials in the Irish manner. And we know that about him because he's just copying the letters here. That's what's in my manuscript. That is what it ought to read. It's a simple scribal error. All right, so Irish books have gone to Tours. Irish books have gone to the continent, but surely this is not just a one-way exchange. Things have to be coming back, or so I would think. So here's another Psalter. Based upon its script alone, it's quite hard to determine where it was written. But what if that's the opening? Now, it doesn't look quite insular. Indeed, most art historians think that this was done by someone who'd been trained in a Frankish school. Possibly that it was written at Tours as well. But the scribe is found in another one of our manuscripts. Keeping similar decoration. But the other manuscript is a copy of Boethius. Now, it's a bad comparison, seeing as it was badly eaten by rats about 300 years ago. These are the unfortunate truths of working in an old library. But they're fairly convinced that the Psalter, at least, was written in England. Mainly because that's the frontispiece. And we've got a lovely little English line drawing, mostly from the Canterbury School, set within a Frankish frame, next to text in Caroline minuscule. This one's also a bit famous, mainly because people think it belonged to Thomas Becket. If you ask me, the jury's still out. However, if we have manuscripts moving, if we have people moving, if we have books moving, how much can we really say that any of these are truly Irish? Now, I told myself I'd be brave and see if the internet will work here. So far, so good, I think. Oop, is it displaying on the screen? How do we make that work? Anyone have any ideas?
Windows.
Right, are you looking to shunt a window across into the screen? Is that?
Yes.
And is it this window?
Yep, that's yes. Fine.
So, is that what you wanted?
Yeah, yes. Perfect.
Are you able to take it from there?
I think so, yep.
Okay, well, give me a chance if you want to move back.
Okay. Oh, now it's gone again. My apologies.
What do you want to show? So you've pulled it back up onto that.
It's back up over there. Okay, so we're just going to have to type over there then. That's going to be interesting.
Oh. You can navigate your way there in the browser and then pull it back across if that would be easier.
I have to use it quite a bit. I think this is the biggest screen I've ever used here. So this is our tour manuscript, the one with the Irish glosses in it. My mouse is on my screen, it can't be there. And if we drop another one. How about something that's actually Irish? The comparison that we were trying before. Be done just like that. There's our Kristen. And zoom in there. Zoom in there. And we've got two manuscripts, both based on Irish exemplars. One made a tour, one made probably in Ireland, at least we'll go for it. But at the end of the day, though they look entirely different, something about them links them still together. And unlike this, I didn't have to download any images. I go back to the PowerPoint. Let's see if he'll come up. Oop, there we go. Ah. Where is the mouse? There is the mouse. Then to bring it back to Oxford. 57 years ago, Wilhelm Levinson was invited to give the Ford Lectures here. He decided to start off by quoting Goethe. Whether a foreign country can become to anyone a fatherland. Well, I can't speak for the Irish missionaries. I can't speak for the Frankish tribes who made their way back to Canterbury. I can't speak for anyone or any manuscript. But I do think we need to consider exactly what we mean when we're talking about books as Chinese or as Arabic, about where they've gone, who made them, why they were made, and where they might have traveled in the interim. Because after all, we're supposed to be here to be decentering the codex, aren't we? That's it.